Rise, radio home for the NHL, NFL, Major League Baseball, the World Juniors, and more. The Calgary Hitmen and Calgary Flames only play here. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Everybody, welcome to the Eric Francis Show. We've moved it from 9 a.m. on Mondays to noon. We'll do it every week. I will endeavor to get some of the big names in the sports, preferably the hockey world, on the show to answer your questions, to get involved in the debates, talk about the issues of the day, the issues of the time. And today is no exception. We're going to start it off with Rich Winner, an agent for Mark Giordano. He's an agent for Andrew Mangiapane, amongst others. But those two in particular will be very, very interesting over the next, well, this summer. Both of them need deals. And already people are talking about a whole lot of options for both of them. The future of Mark Giordano, very much open in the air coming to the trade deadline. And, of course, the future of Mangiapane, not as cloudy because he's a restricted free agent, but a lot of questions surrounding the contract he may sign or won't sign. I wanted to get Rich on to talk about both those players, amongst other things, as well as the Olympic hockey decision being taken out of the player's hands. What does he think about that? What would his advice have been for Andrew Mangiapane had he been selected to play for the team? Would he have been saying, hey, go for it, have a great time? Or would he have said, you know what, I don't think it's safe or I don't think it's right? Anyway, we'll get into all those things with Rich Winner. We have him on the line. He's actually in Mexico right now with his family enjoying a vacation, but he was still keen to come on and talk about both those players, amongst other things. Rich, are you there?
I am. How are you doing? Happy New Year, Eric.
Happy New Year, my friend. Listen, we're going to get to the fan feedback line. I encourage people to text in 960-960 if they have questions for Rich Winner pertaining to Mark Giordano, Andrew Mangiapane. Any comments you may have, it could be anything else to do with the world of agents. But I want to kick it off by talking to you, Rich, about Andrew Mangiapane. And while he's kind of taken the hockey world by storm early this year, this is not a surprise to you. You and I have been speaking for several years, and you and one of his former coaches have been comparing him to a Hall of Famer for quite some time. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, we try and project as best we can what our clients are likely to play at, you know, for purposes of trying to evaluate long-term versus short-term deals. And I met Andrew through Dale Hawerchuk, who very early on told me he felt very strongly that Andrew would become a player of the caliber of a Brad Marchand or a Marty St. Louis. And, you know, initially that surprised me, despite the fact he was producing at a fairly high level in junior hockey. But what hasn't surprised me is of late, over the last few years, and you and I have chatted about this over the last few years, his production is among the best in the entire National Hockey League. He has been the most productive goal scorer in the Calgary Flames now for three full seasons based on the amount of ice time he gets. By that, I mean his goals per minute played. And what's interesting is when you compare him to the league this year, I haven't done it since they got on vacation, but prior to the road trip, I suspect it's dipped a little bit. You know, he's well ahead of Alexander Ovechkin in terms of his production, goal production at even strength, well ahead of Marner and Dreisaitl, among the league leaders, just slightly behind Kyle Connor in Winnipeg. Andrew has been producing at an elite level 4 years, beginning in the Ontario Hockey League and continuing into the National Hockey League. So none of this has surprised us at all. In my view, Andrew will be, over the course of the next 3 years, among the top five forwards in the game. I really think there's a lot of evidence to support that, because what's surprising is Andrew's accomplishing this and scoring at this rate while playing 3-4 minutes less than the other players, which only tells you the other players are playing with the best players on his team, their teams. And, of course, Andrew, by playing, you know, 13, 14 minutes a night, is not playing with the best forwards on the Calgary Flames. And I think there's good reason for that, in the sense that if you look at what Andrew does, in addition to being good defensively, good production-wise, he also constantly elevates the play of everybody he plays with. And if you look at all of his teammates over the last couple of years, when they play with Andrew, they tend to produce at a little higher rate. Now, Andrew can't take entire credit for that because he's not the only guy on the ice, but it's astonishing how effective he is, like a lot of elite players, in elevating the games of the people around him. And I suspect to a degree that's why Darryl uses him on the second power play unit instead of the first, because he's the best on this team statistically for elevating the play of those around him. It's not a surprise that Darryl would use him on the second or third line for the same reason. So in many respects, as frustrating it is at times to not get the kind of ice time your production should suggest you get, and it's a backhanded compliment because you're more valuable than just the goals you bring to the table. So it's been interesting. Andrew has just proven from day one that he's going to outperform everyone's projections of him. And I think we saw it last year on the Olympic team. We saw what Andrew could do for a team when given that opportunity in a more elite role. And it's something it's just one of the issues you deal with as part of the team. When you have a coach who's trying to build the best team, it doesn't always result in you getting the best opportunity, because maybe you getting the best opportunity, as is the case here, isn't necessarily what's best for the team.
Okay, so we're talking to Rich Winter. He's the agent for Andrew Mangiapane, Mark Giordano, and a cast of others. And, I want to go back to that, his ice time, because I'm sure that's an issue that's probably bothered you and probably bothered Andrew over the years. But first, I just want to set the stage for this summer. Just give us the Coles Notes version of how you see this summer shaping up. He's a restricted free agent, basically has one more year after this year before he can hit unrestricted free agency. What will be your advice to Andrew Mangiapane as he enters contract talks this summer?
Well, I think if more than anything, if I was to sum it up in one word, I would suggest be patient. There's an awful lot of variables going on around him. Like, is Johnny staying? Is Chucky staying? What's happening around you on the team? But more importantly, what other opportunities are there out there? You're a year away from being an unrestricted free agent at 27 years of age, really in the heart of the best producing years of your career. Wouldn't you want, my advice to him would be, let's do a short-term deal. That's, by way of arbitration or negotiation ideally. And then let's wait and take a look at the landscape. Because as a young player, you want to be the best you can be. You want to be challenged in Stanley Cup-type environments. These are the kinds of decisions Marian Hossa made around his trip to Detroit and then to Chicago. So my suggestion would be, let's do as good a deal and a reasonable deal as we can with the Calgary Flames. And then you should simply wait and see what the options are. Because at 27 years of age, if he continues to play at the level he is, there'll be a lot of them. And I think there's nothing more valuable in a player's career than his ability to look into free agency and see what the options are. And I'd highly recommend that he focus on that.
Okay, so if we're looking at a one-year deal, it's probably a little too early to start throwing out comparisons in terms of what he might be able to land on a one-year deal with arbitration rights. But do you have a ballpark number out there right now, or do we have to wait and see how this season plays out?
Well, I think you have to wait until the season plays out because, as you go into arbitration, as everybody knows, your value is determined by players of comparable experience and capabilities in terms of production generally. Now, at the end of the day, there's a group of players that Andrew compares to, many of whom don't have a deal yet. So for us to first speculate what Andrew will produce and then speculate on what some of his comparables will also produce and then try and guess what they might get, we're a bit hamstrung at this early stage to try and evaluate what the numbers might be. There'll be a raise over where he's at, obviously, but the range could be fairly significant in terms of the higher end of the range and the lower end of the range based on his performance and the performance of those players he compares to.
Okay, so your advice is to not sign a long-term deal. I mean, I guess you would probably quantify that by saying, wait a second, if the right number came along, we're all businessmen here and we would consider it. But He's in the second year of it.
I would never say that.
No?
No, I would never say that because I think there's two deals in every contract, or two components to every contract. One is money, and the other is opportunity. And I think you have to look at opportunity because it always leads to, quite frankly, more money, but also the kind of satisfaction players are looking for in terms of being in an environment where they can perform the best. Look at Marian Hossa, for example. He was offered very close to $100 million by a couple of teams, and he instead chose to play for the Detroit Red Wings for $7.4 million on a one-year deal. By doing that, he put himself in a position working and playing with and practicing against Pavel Datsyuk, that he created an environment where he learned so much by that experience. That alone was probably critical to him winning three Stanley Cups in Chicago and then going on to play in the Hall of Fame. So I think it's myopic to think there's just the number is the only thing coming into play. Now, that said, I'm not numbers oriented. I'm package oriented. I'm interested in learning what the opportunities, who am I going to play with? Where am I going to live? What's the tax situation? Where are my young family, which he will have at some point as we move forward? Where are they going to school? What are the issues with COVID? What are the restrictions? Would you rather live in Florida? Would you rather live in Edmonton or Texas versus Toronto? I mean, there's so many different factors that are very difficult to process until you reach the point at which you have those opportunities in front of you. I would never recommend money over opportunity. But that said, it's not my deal. At the end of the day, there may be a number that Andrew finds very compelling that he will take, and that's his choice. Won't be,
okay.
Will be against my advice, but it will definitely be his choice.
Interesting. So, over the course of the next however many months, you're going to have all sorts of people drawing comparisons to different players and speculating on what it would take to get Andrew under contract for the next 6, 7, 8 years, 4, 5, whatever the number might be. And you're saying that your advice to Andrew would be, no matter what those numbers are, you would recommend waiting that out and seeing what the other opportunities are with as we get closer to, unrestricted free agency.
Because ultimately people, I mean, when you look at it, the difference, let's say a difference of $1 million a year on a longer term deal, it's only $500,000 after taxes. You're making a considerable amount of money anyway. What are the other options? Do I want to play with, I don't want to pick any particular players to target anything because we really haven't targeted anything and we can't. But if you had a chance to play with an elite group of forwards that live nearby, would that be appealing? If you were looking at challenging for the Stanley Cup and that became your focus and something you wanted to do, how much would you give up to do that? You don't really know until you're faced with the opportunities after you become an unrestricted free agent, because at the end of the day, you don't really know what they are and what they want. You could have designs on playing with a couple of forwards that you think you have very good chemistry or would have chemistry in, but unfortunately that team's not that interested or they don't have cap space, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I just think patience is a virtue for a reason. I just think you should exercise it, especially when your stock's rising. It's a different situation when you're a 33-year-old forward hoping to, capitalize on your previous performance and get a long-term deal at a time in your career where your performance is likely to de-escalate.
Sure.
That's a different game.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
We're not in that game with Andrew at 27.
Okay. We're talking to Eric Francis Show, and we're talking to Rich Winner about Andrew Mangiapane right now. And the fan feedback line is open, 960-960. We'll be taking some questions for Rich about Andrew, about Giordano, about a whole bunch of other things. But, I wonder, when we look at the Mangiapane situation, is there any chance that there are any lingering feelings about 2019-20 when the organization said, you have no rights, we're going to stick you with a one-year two-way contract for $715,000. And there wasn't a holdout, but it took a little longer for you guys to come to terms on that. That had to have stuck in his craw, been a motivator for him. Am I putting words in his mouth?
Well, I think Andrews, it's the type of motivator Andrews had all his life, you know. Too small, not strong enough. And it really, because, you know, at the same time that year, the Flames had another unrestricted free agent, but they didn't treat that way. Now, they identified that they were different because of the experience Matthew Tkachuk had had over the course of 3 years prior to becoming a restricted free agent. But, yeah, I think it's a motivator to say, you know, because ultimately what happened is by taking a one-year deal instead of the two-year deals we were discussing, Andrew ended up considerably better compensated than he would otherwise. So, I mean, in the end, he was looking at a two-year option, and he decided to decline it because he expected to outperform the contract that was offered, and he did by a considerable margin. So, yeah, I guess he used it as motivation and ultimately was rewarded for doing so.
Okay, and similarly, you know, his ice time has not been as you were said earlier, it's not been, it doesn't match up with what the big goal scorers in the league are getting. Has that improved in your opinion? Like, I know in their last game, he was on the top power play unit because the coach wanted to shake things up. The numbers do seem to have been going up before Christmas. And now since Christmas, he's back at that 16, 15, 17 minute mark. In your opinion, has that been getting better?
Well, it's not. It's really only better or worse compared to what the options are. I mean, would he like to play? I would think he and I never really talk about these specifically. Would he like to play on that first power play unit? I suspect he'll be more productive. You want to see what you can do, but he also understands. Andrew's a team player. He also understands that part of his role is buoying up the lines that he's playing on and contributing as best he can to creating more even level of scoring across the entire lineup. But yeah, I mean, I don't think we evaluated over the course of the last three or four games. You look at over the course of the season, and he's playing second, third line minutes. He's consistently been among the Flames' fifth or sixth leaders in terms of ice time. And despite that, those limitations, he's performed very well, which makes you wonder what could he have done playing in an 18-minute role or 19-minute role. You would expect two things to happen. His production to go up because he's getting more ice time, and his production per minute played potentially to rise because he'd be playing with more productive players. Because when you play more, when you play 19 minutes a night, you're not playing with third-line players. You're playing with first-line players. But again, Andrew understands it, and he's quite comfortable doing what he needs to do to make the team better and understands why he's playing in that capacity. And, you know, he's definitely not playing the Marner, Dreisaitl, Goudreau type minutes. And he gets that his role in this particular situation is different. And that's why you want to look out into free agency, in my mind, and see what other opportunities are out there. Because ultimately, you just don't know. You don't really know until free agency what the coach of Team X thinks of you and where he'll play you. I have a policy with my free agents who have options. I require them to speak to the coach before we sign, and that's designed to give them a really clear impression of how the coach they're about to agree to work with is going to play them. And they have a pretty good sense after those conversations. You know, coaches don't tend to be misleading in that regard. They tend to give them a pretty honest assessment. And that's something you'll want to know as free agency is made available to you. So there's a reason that we lost a season so players could have free agency at a younger age. It's the most valuable component of the collective bargaining agreement for elite young players. And, you know, again, I would recommend Andrew take a serious look. Again, it's not my choice. Ultimately, he will decide whether he takes that, you know, 8-year deal at $15 million a year. You know, I'm kidding, obviously, but whatever the number is, there may be a number that in Andrew's mind, and things may change. He likes Calgary. He has lots of friends in Calgary. He has friends on the team. Things may change. Team may stay together to a large degree. Some may depart. Others may be added to free agency next year. The team may be the best choice. So you don't want to close the door on Calgary being a spot. There's a lot of factors that weigh in favor of him signing long-term in Calgary after free agency. So it's not like this is, in my recommendation, is a decision or would be, it should be interpreted as a decision that he might leave Calgary. It's only designed to make sure he evaluates all the options, one of which will be Calgary. Because you know what? A lot of players have left places that they've been in the past, like a James Neal, and been very disappointed by the results. So one thing you know going into free agency is you know, and if you're comfortable, you're comfortable and you know what you're getting where you're at. So that's a huge factor that always weighs in favor of staying where you are. So, again, evaluating all this doesn't mean that Calgary isn't at the top of the list or may not be at the top of the list by the time that free agency period opens up.
But you're no different than most agents who, once your client gets to within 1 year of unrestricted free agency, it almost seems ludicrous. You and I joke about that word a lot, but it almost seems ludicrous that you wouldn't wait it out and just see what's over the horizon, especially when a player like Mangiapane, whose stock is going up, nothing but up and up and up. You know, you're no different than most agents with this sort of advice. Am I correct?
I think it varies by, you know, agent and player, but I think for the most part, I would like to think most agents are discussing the options with the player. And it depends a lot on the player. Like, you know, Marian Hossa made some very unique decisions, but he'd already made $60 or $70 million. Money wasn't an issue, wasn't a driver. So I don't think you can say there's a standard. I think everybody's aware of the fact. And I think when teams go to players, they understand that when you come to a player, say a year before your unrestricted free agency kicks in, and you put a fair amount of money on the table, burden of hand, right? It's very difficult to ignore. Whether you accept it or not is a personal decision. But strategically, it's the best angle that teams have to get players to sign. And Brad's been pretty effective at this in terms of other players on this team. And, you know, yeah, I think I'm worth a little bit more, but, you know, at the end of the day, this is a lot of money, Mom, Dad. I think I'm going to tell my agent I'm going to take it. And usually there's a lot of factors that come into play that we don't always aren't able to evaluate. What are his family saying to him? Where is he at with his family? If he's got a young family and two of them are enrolled in a school that they're very happy, how much does that come into play? For some players, it's a lot. And again, I don't think it's as simple as, I really don't, if it's as simple as take the most money, we find numerous examples. Luch is an example. James Neal's an example of how chasing the money ultimately could make you very miserable. And you know what? When you're being chastised in the press and your family feels uncomfortable where you're playing because you're being beat up all the time, a lot of players would say, look back at those situations and say, you know what? I should have taken the deal in Las Vegas. I was happy there. Right? You just don't know the mix. And, you know, as much as Brad may love a particular player or another GM may love a particular player, we're never really certain how the coach is going to react to him once he gets him in the lineup.
Yeah, absolutely.
So and patience doesn't guarantee you a perfect decision. It just guarantees you a better informed decision.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You're listening to the Eric Francis Show. We'll be on the air every noon on Mondays, every single week as part of the changes here on the Fan 960. And we're talking to Rich Winter about Andrew Mangiapane right now. We're going to get into Mark Giordano and some other things and some great questions on the fan feedback line, 960-960. And we'll get to a couple of those, but I want to ask you about the Olympics. We'll never know if Andrew Mangiapane would have been asked to be on the Canadian Olympic team. But had he been asked to be on the Olympic team, and I know there are a lot of variables in that question, but what would your advice have been to a player like him who would have been asked to go to a very controversial place at a very controversial time like China? What would your thoughts have been?
Book a place in Cabo.
Yeah.
And okay. The reason, Eric, is because, you know what, there is just too much risk associated with it. Around if you test positive, how much of the season will you miss? How much salary will you lose? And in a year, which is very important to Andrew establishing himself as a player at an elite level, I would have said stay home, take care of your own team first. And I think I don't know if he would have agreed with that because we never got that far. But believe me, a lot of players, as it was getting closer, had a lot of concerns. I personally don't like the politics of the government in China and find it distasteful and immoral. But that said, that would have been that's my own personal opinion. It'd be very difficult. I mean, I think for a young player like Andrew, especially with the success he had at the World Hockey Championships, not to go play on a world stage against the best players in the world. So I honestly don't think if the league wouldn't have declined attending, I'm very sure that when the decision came down to it, very few players would have gone. Because you have to remember, there's not everybody's competing for a gold medal. So if you're an American, a Canadian, and a Russian, and maybe a Swede who are thinking a gold medal is a real possibility, well, there's lots to lose by not going. But if you're playing for the Czech Republic and Slovakia and Germany and some of these others, you're taking a big risk for virtually no upside. And it would have been hard to determine how that all would have played out if players had started saying no, whether it started with a raft of German players or Finnish players or Czech or Slovak players. It's hard to know. I just didn't get the sense that when it came down to it, the players weren't really somewhat concerned, more so than people would think, about the risks. I mean, these guys have been quarantined in their own homes, and it's almost driven them crazy. The thought of being quarantined, you know, halfway around the world in a 4x4 hotel room at an Olympic village or somewhere nearby, once it comes down to evaluating that as a real risk, I'm not sure anybody would have gone.
Interesting. It would be fascinating to throw that at your client, like Andrew, who gets a chance to play on the Canadian Olympic team, and him, have him have to debate. We've got to take a break right now, but when we come back, I want to ask you if you thought the NHL was right to take the decision out of the players' hands, because that's ultimately what it came down to, and Andrew didn't have a chance, or any of the guys didn't have a chance, to try and mull over all the different factors. We're talking to Rich Winter. It's the Eric Francis Show. We're going to take a break here. The show is brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has a $312 million economic impact annually and positively affects almost every Alberta community. Visit thehorses.com. We'll be back in a couple minutes with Rich Winter. You're listening to Sportsnet 960, The Fan. We're back. Jump right into it. It's the Eric Francis Show. We're talking to Rich Winter. We covered Andrew Mangiapane inside and out. We'll have to wait and see what happens with him this summer. He needs a new contract, 1 year away from unrestricted free agency. I want to jump right into, we'll talk about the Olympic decision as I teased before the break, but I want to talk about Mark Giordano because a lot of people have very strong opinions one way or the other as to what the future may hold for Mark Giordano, and Rich is his agent. I'll ask you the obvious question first. Is there any chance Mark Giordano may finish this season with the Calgary Flames?
Well, I certainly think there's a possibility. Coach loves him. Player loves the coach. Player has a home in the city. And the team is, seems to be, for the most part, playing much better. There's you're getting a lot of great performances from Shillington. Rasmus Anderson's now back. Manji's having a great year. Coleman's added a little bit. I think there could be an argument that, a guy like Gio with a little bit more offense could really add to the mix, but that's not something we control. Ron Francis made it very clear from, in his pursuit of Mark over the course of the time preceding the expansion draft that, he wanted him on his team. So, I would think there's a possibility because you look at the landscape, there's not a lot of teams that have a need for a veteran player like Gio, have the cap room, and actually could see the acquisition of Mark as a feather in their cap as they, move forward to try and challenge for a Stanley Cup or get considerably farther in the playoffs than they have in the past. So there's not a lot of suitors, and I really think, I got to think, Brad and I have talked about this a lot over the course of the summer. He certainly didn't want to lose him. And I think that his feelings won't have changed. Now, whether he can acquire him, it's really hard to say. It's going to depend on, like every trade deadline, yeah, Gio was a good choice for team X, Y, and Z, but the ask is so big that it fell apart and he finished the season in Seattle. It's really hard to say. That's a decision ultimately that Ron Francis has to make. So we'll see. But Calgary's got to be a possibility. I know from Gio's perspective, obviously his entire adult life has been lived in the city of Calgary, where, you know, he counts most of his friends, many of whom are teammates. And I got to think he'd be excited about it.
Okay. I guess you wouldn't tell me if you'd been confronted is not the word. If Ron Francis, has he broached this subject with you guys yet in terms of whether or not he'd be interested in moving, or given any indication that he would move him at the deadline? Because he's got a 19 trade, a limited no trade clause. I'm assuming the Flames, as you alluded to, would be on that. He'd be happy to come back if that was an option.
Well, first, he doesn't have a 19 team no trade list. He doesn't have no trade list at all. But Ron and I have chatted about it over the course of the season. I don't see anybody making a serious move until shortly before the trade deadline, because most teams that would be interested don't have the cap room to bring him in early. So to me, the conversation has been pretty premature. Ron and I have chatted about it a number of times, but, you know, never really, you know, a lot of it's been a little bit of wait and see and find out. They've got some other issues going on in their club with some players with injuries and COVID and other things. So I'm not so sure this is on a front burner for Ron. It won't likely become a front burner issue, I wouldn't think, for at least another month.
Okay. What sort of deal is he looking for in the summer? Or is it, I know it's early, but, you know, would Mark, I'm assuming he's made enough money and it's just about finding a comfortable spot that he thinks is a good fit for him.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's indicated for a long period of time he has no interest in hanging them up, and he's playing among his best hockey, despite the fact the production's not there. The team's not producing at the same levels the Flames were when he was playing here. But, you know, he's played well, and I think teams recognize that. There's nothing to suggest he's slowing down. We might be challenged to get an 8-year deal from someone, but I would think that people would see him to have, you know, considerable utility for the next few years. And, look at what Edmonton did in bringing in Duncan Keith. Looking for a veteran player like that to mentor a young core. There's a couple of teams that are, you know, performing at a surprising high level that have young defensemen that a guy like Mark would be a great mentor to. So it's really hard. It's so hard to guess this. I know everybody on shows like this likes to speculate, but there's so many variables involved that I just don't bother, because ultimately it'll come down to a call that I may get from Ron sometime in March, where, you know, he's got some options. He's going to ask me what Gio's thoughts are. And it's hard to say. They don't have a lot in Seattle, right? Like, you know, they haven't put together the core that Las Vegas did. They've had a few injuries. They probably end up trading a few guys, I would think, whether it's Gio or somebody else. That's going to make them somewhat asset poor. So it's really hard to evaluate where Ron will cut the ties in terms of making moves, because ultimately you can't gut the entire team and move every asset of value, because you won't have any assets left.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry to clarify. So Cap Friendly says that starting last year, he had a limited no trade clause where he could give a list of 19 teams that he would go to. That is not true at all. There are no parameters on a possible trade for Giordano.
There's some, and I'll have to go back and look at them, but it's not 19.
Okay. All right. Listen, was the NHL right to take the decision out of the players' hands and basically eliminate the possibility of NHLers going to the Olympics?
Well, I think so. I think they made absolutely the right decision, because if you look at the landscape now, based on the loss of revenue last year, the players currently owe the league $1 billion. In that they're going to have to make up in future escrow payments from their paychecks to the league. So down $1 billion, to take the risk of going to the Olympics as COVID started to rear its head creates a situation where you may be massively down in revenue again. If COVID they went to the Olympics and were unable to complete a full season or extend the season into, you know, July again, the risk on the revenue drain was so substantial that, I mean, they're putting the players and the league, because, you know, it's nice that the player, from an owner's perspective, I guess it's in some respects helpful that the league or the team players owe them some escrow going forward, but they still lost an awful lot of money to get there. So the league is in, you know, it's in decent shape, in my view, from given the circumstances that we faced. You know, Gary's got a new television deal and some other things. But we're not out of the COVID jungle yet. And for them to go to the Olympics and risk that that would massively disrupt the revenue-generating potential of this season, I think they absolutely made the right decision.
Okay. We're talking to Rich Winter. Well, just one more quick one here for you, Rich. Several questions on the fan feedback line. One of them is a great question. The reluctance for some players to play in Canada. Do you have a lot of clients who just say that they would rather not play in Canada? And is this a big issue amongst a lot of players?
I think it depends on where the player's from. I think a lot of European players, many of whom come from big, well-known metropolitan cities, you know, cosmopolitan cities in Europe, like the idea of New York, Miami, Los Angeles, you know, the big American cities. It's never been a big issue. I think, you know, in fact, I remember when Peter Sikora, after playing with the New Jersey Devils and the Anaheim Ducks, just loved playing in Edmonton. You know, he loved being at the gas station and having to say, "Hey, Pete, good luck tonight, buddy." Where in Anaheim, mm-hmm. they wouldn't know who he was if he was wearing a Ducks jersey. You know, so I think it varies, but I do think that, you know, the taxes here are a bit of a challenge. The weather's here. You just have to put yourself in the perspective of, you know, who you're talking about. If you're talking about a 19, 20, 21-year-old kid who's maybe signing as an unrestricted free agent out of college, he's like every 19, 21-year-old kid. Chicago sounds great. L.A. sounds fantastic. On the other hand, you know, Alberta is the only place outside of the United States that the American government doesn't give their employees stationed here an educational allowance because the education system here is deemed to be so good. So when you have kids in school here and you're enjoying family life, I think there's as much of an argument for coming here as there is leaving here. But I think you factor in the Europeans or Americans who've lived in big metropolitan areas, and then there is a tendency to think. I mean, yeah, I would think Canada is challenged, but if you have a good team, a good coach, and some great players to play with. You know, Zach Hyman picked Edmonton, you know, so yeah. Well, Blake Coleman picked Calgary, you know, so
yeah.
I mean, Blake Coleman must have saw it as a fit and Zach Hyman saw it as a fit. So it's back to opportunity. And when you start evaluating a single factor as an overwhelming factor, it just doesn't pan out because there's just too many other things that come into it. And, you know, if that was the case, no one would ever have signed in Montreal, Calgary, Edmonton, and they've all signed decent free agents the last few years, so I don't see it as an impediment when the opportunity's right. If you got a bad team and a bad economy and a terrible tax regime and you're in Canada and it can be minus 47 apparently at times, you're challenged. You know, one of the things that does it, people don't think about it, but you get a player who's coming on a long road trip, say from the southeastern United States, Carolina, LA, or Tampa Bay, or Florida. He brings a modestly warm jacket for his road swing to Anaheim, LA, up through San Jose, and then he arrives in Edmonton. In Edmonton, it's minus 47 that night, and he has a jacket that wouldn't keep him alive. It was minus, you know, 5, and he just says to himself, "Oh, I'm never coming back here again." And of course, he hasn't seen Calgary or Edmonton, you know, during the spring, during the fall, when it's, you know, it's very nice here. So there are sometimes circumstances where a player just gets in his head, Calgary and Edmonton are just not going to be the spot. And, you know, sometimes it's no different when a GM sees a player play once or twice over the course of 5 seasons before he makes a trade. Sure, he's listening to his scouts, but he can't get over the fact the guy was either awesome or awful those 2 games he saw them. So depending, you know, if a guy comes up here and plays a game in mid-September in the exhibition season or early October, goes over to one of his former teammates' place for a nice barbecue overlooking the river in either Calgary or Edmonton, they change their tune pretty quickly. It's a lot of it's circumstantial.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, Rich, I really appreciate it. He's in Mexico right now. You get back to the beach. Enjoy your holiday. Thanks for the insights, and we'll be talking to you again in the near future because you always bring some great perspectives on the hockey world. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you, and Happy New Year, everybody. Of course, Calgary was my home as a graduate of the University of Calgary, so I envy it. I go there often, and I hope that Calgary turns it around because the fan base there deserves some success, and they've got a group of players, I think, capable of delivering it. Hopefully they can hit on all cylinders between now and the end of the season.
Absolutely. We have a shut-up going on right now, too, so lots going for us here in Calgary. Thanks, Rich. Enjoy your holiday.
Okay, take care.
Okay, so that was Rich Winter. Great insights, some interesting stuff on Giordano, on Andrew Mangiapane. I want to switch gears really quickly here because there's a lot of confusion in the marketplace because of all the games that have been postponed. Some people use the word canceled. I think they know that's not the right word, but it's sometimes just something we say. And I wanted to bring on Mike Franco. He's the VP of Sales, Service, Ticketing, and Suites for the Flames, because I just wanted him to clarify for people who have tickets for games that have already been postponed or games that are coming up that are either in play or have been postponed, you know, how do they, you know, prepare for what's coming up? So we've got Mike on the line. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem, Eric. Thanks for having me.
You're about the busiest guy in the city right now. So I appreciate your time because I wanted to just get, you know, help people out. Honestly, you know, I'm a season ticket holder, and I spread the tickets out to all my friends, but, you know, they're calling me with questions, and I thought, why not go straight to the source? If you're a season ticket holder and you have a ticket for Thursday's game, are you going to the game, or what do you need to know before you plan on maybe going to the game?
Yeah, and I appreciate you giving us a chance for some clarity. This is a unique situation, one that I've been doing this for a long time and never had to actually deal with going backwards on some of these things. But, you know, we started, most of the games are postponed. So anybody who's got a game that's postponed, those tickets remain valid until we have a new date, and then we'll communicate at that point. So anything that's been listed as postponed, people can just kind of take a breath until we get a new schedule. As far as Ottawa, it looks like we're going to play that game on the 13th, and that game is going to be played under the new restrictions in this province of 50% capacity. And so that put us in a bit of a unique position. And we are working through what we felt was the fairest way to build a system that we know isn't going to be perfect. You know, I don't think there was a perfect system out there, but to take some learning on what's happened and to try to make the best possible opportunity for our season ticket holders. So basically, if you've forwarded your tickets, if you've resold your tickets, if you've used them in a way that you would traditionally use them, we've tried to keep those ones as they are for this game only. We're going to deal with this as a game on a game-to-game basis. And the reason we did that, Eric, is unwinding of the ticket transaction is actually quite complicated. And we got into it on the 27th and 31st of December when we had to cancel those or postpone those games, because the ticket system actually makes you cancel it. And so we had to unwind every transaction, every resale, and then put tickets back in people's account and say, now, as a season ticket holder, you get to start over. And we had a lot of feedback on that. We just didn't think it was right. So we tried to look at what's the fairest way to do this. And then we had a number of ticket holders who hadn't taken action yet. And we said, a number of you have asked that if we wanted to, you know, we got to take 3,000-4,000 people out of the game, that you would be willing to sit this one out. So we did a hand-raising campaign and asked those ticket holders if they want to sit this one out, please put up your hand. It wasn't a guarantee that we can do that because we weren't sure what the uptake would be. And then tomorrow we're going to send an email out to everybody to let them know what's in their account. Either your ticket's active or your ticket will have been returned. And that, will be for this game. We're going to learn from it. We'll take more feedback. And we think that fits the general population and fully understand there's unique circumstances to everybody's ticket situation. And in those cases, I would encourage them to call our customer service department. We'd be happy to chat through the unique situations as they come up.
Wow. Okay. So much to unpack there, but we're talking to Mike Franco from the Flames. He deals with all their ticketing situations, which makes him, like I said, the busiest man in Alberta right now, outside of maybe his counterpart in Edmonton. Tell me about what if you just bought a single ticket, like you bought a ticket and you're hoping to go to the game against Ottawa, or you're hoping to go to the game that's since been postponed against Vegas. How are you going to be, how do you find out what the status of that ticket is? Do you literally just have to call the club?
Yeah, so anybody, if you're talking like the Vegas game where it's postponed, everybody would have received a note that your ticket will remain valid for the new event date. So what they have to do is have to actually wait until we have a new schedule. And I know the NHL is working tirelessly on trying to fill in a calendar here. So we know we're going to get busy. And so when those dates get rescheduled, we are hopeful that some of these restrictions will no longer be in place. And if that's the case and we can play to full capacity, it's just the same seat. Everything's the same. It's just played on a different date. If you are in the situation, like I said, on the game on the 27th against Edmonton, the 31st against Winnipeg, or this January 13th game, most of the single game tickets were returned. And those people would have received a communication. So if you haven't heard from us on anything, it means your game probably hasn't been impacted yet. You would have seen if it's postponed, and if it's been, we had to unwind those transactions, and we'd let those people know.
Okay, so yeah, someone bought it from StubHub. They've been informed in some way that their ticket is no longer active. It's been deactivated, or it still is active.
Yeah, this is where the ticketing world gets really complicated, even though it seems like it should be a simple solution. If someone can buy it from StubHub and then forward it along to another person and forwards it along to someone else, we see ticket transactions a lot of times go through four or five sets of hands before they go to the person who actually goes. So all we can do is go to the end line, and the person who is currently holding the ticket at the time, they've been communicated. Our season ticket holders would have been communicated with, but there could be people in the middle there that might not have received the communication because it's just near impossible for us to get to all those levels. So the people with tickets in their hand and season ticket holders is really where the communication goes. So if you were a season ticket holder and you sent it to somebody, the person that you sent it to would have been told, or you would have been told. So the layers on it gets pretty complicated when you think of all the ways you can use your tickets.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and I know you got to run. I got to run. So last quick question. What if you've got a ticket and they do end up putting out the new schedule and that game is just not going to work for you? You're out of the country. You just, for whatever reason, can't go. How does that work? I guess they just call you directly?
Yeah, we'll work with those. We'll give them the options when we send that. There's usually for single game buyers, there's usually give them a small window for refunds that they can do. And that's with any canceled game with our event through Ticketmaster, because that transaction takes place on Ticketmaster. So they'll get a small little window, or we'll give them an opportunity to move it to another game. And then the season ticket holders will provide some options on what's the best way. Usually with season ticket holders, you've got all the sorts of tools for games when it's come up in a 45-game season. Season ticket holders are actually the best versed at managing their tickets for situations when they can't go. So all those tools will remain in place, but we'll try to communicate all of those pieces once that new schedule comes out and we have a little bit more clarity on the restrictions. Because quite frankly, the postponement's not the issue. It's if we have to reduce capacity. We've got more people, more Calgarians, grateful hockey fans, that want to come to our games than we have available seats. So it's unwinding sales that is the biggest challenge and something we're not used to doing. It's usually trying to fill the building, not shrink it. But we know that the Steve Red will still be loud at 50%, and our Flames fans will not disappoint when we do get them inside that building.
All right. Mike, thank you. I'll let you get back to it. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Eric.
Okay, take care. All right, so that was Mike Franco with the Flames. He deals with all the ticketing situations, nightmares, however you want to term it. What a job. A lot of moving parts there, and hopefully he clarified a little bit of that for everybody listening. If you have a ticket or season tickets, there you go. All right, busy show. I want to thank Rich Winter for joining us and Mike Franco. This is the Eric Francis Show every Monday, starting at noon, goes to 1 o'clock, and it's brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry cares for their horses. They employ Albertans, and it contributes to the economy. Learn more at thehorses.com. See you next week, everybody.